Good afternoon. The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order, the show you've all been waiting for on Friday afternoon. Some announcements to start, as will only be the case for, I guess, one more meeting, since the deadline is fast approaching. We will be carrying over the following bills: House Bill 2370, House Joint Memorial 22, House Bill 2727, House Bill 3613, House Bill 3158, House Bill 3591, and House Bill 2879.
Have I named all of them? We might hear that today.
2879, we will try to hear that today. We just, I think, got some of the necessary paperwork since I wrote this list. We've also, since the agenda was initially printed, our passage of a related ATV bill makes House Bill 3024 unnecessary, so we will not be hearing that one. Given all of that, we'll start with a work session on House Bill 2960. If you could please remind us.
House Bill 2960 establishes Jobs, Energies, and Schools Fund. The Dash 4 Amendment has been adopted, also known as the Coal Schools Bill.
Thank you very much.
Is there an amendment?
There is. We adopted the Dash 4 Amendment in our last meeting, and I think it's ready to go to its next step. Okay. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move House Bill 2960. See, I'm dyslexic today. To the floor with a due pass recommendation with a prior referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Beyer moves House Bill 2960 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there a discussion? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. The bill needs some amendments. I've spoken at length with Representative Bailey regarding those amendments and received appropriate assurances that those amendments will be managed in Ways and Means. And with that caveat, I will support the motion.
Thank you. Further discussion? Representative Widener?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, this one I will be a no on. I think it's a little too complicated at this time, but I guess it is worth Ways and Means possibly taking a look, but I will be putting a no on the record today, so they will look at this very closely and any problems that there could be with it, because I see it being tough for some of our school districts to use the way the mapping and everything went with it. So it's, I think there's better ways we could go about this.
Thank you. Representative Smith?
Thanks for sharing. Representative Benz's comments are well taken and germane, and there is a commitment to continue to work, and met with the governor's office today, and they're pledged to get personally involved in that work as well, and so appreciate people's support for it, and it's good to continue to move it and continue to work on it.
Thank you. Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, will support moving this down, but any support after that does depend on the amendments that Representative Benz is referring to. I have had some concerns about the complexity of the bill as we've been moving along with it, and also whether the benefits are as equal for districts in the COU areas as opposed to the IOU areas. So I'm going to put that reservation aside and move this forward and hope that the amendments are taken care of.
Thank you very much. Anyone else? Okay. I appreciate all the comments, and certainly one of the most complicated and interesting bills that we've seen. Obviously some more work to do. It reminds me of some of the work on the East legislation last session. I expect we will see some more substantive changes in Ways and Means, and appreciate everyone's support. With that, let's have a roll call vote, please. And the motion, again, is to go to the Ways and Means Committee.
Representative
Lindsay. Excused.
Representative Nathanson.
Aye.
Representative Smith.
Aye.
Representative Widener.
No.
Vice Chair Beyer.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Excused.
Chair
Benz?
Aye. Chair
Reed? Aye. Motion having received the required majority is passed, and House Bill 2960 goes to the floor with due pass recommendation and on to Ways and Means as amended. close the work session on House Bill 2960 and open a work session on House Bill 2042. Zach.
House Bill 2042 allows a person to provide to the Department of Transportation odometer disclosure for vehicles 10 years old or older.
And Zach, this, do we have amendments on this? Or
We were handed the amendment at the beginning of committee. I don't know where it came from. We do not have any paperwork as far as fiscal or revenue on it.
Okay. And the bill does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, or is it headed right to the floor?
It is going to the floor.
Okay. You heard the discussion on the bill in the last session, I think, when I was...
this is first public hearing.
Oh, it's first public hearing. Okay. So do we have some folks who have... signed up? Sorry, they didn't give you appropriate warning for where we're going next. Thank you. Daryl Fuller, Mark Chet, and Amy Joyce. Excuse me, I may have opened the work session when I meant to open a public hearing, so we'll open a public hearing at the same time. You're all alone, Mr. Fuller. Oh, there's Amy. And here comes Mark. Okay.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Daryl Fuller, on behalf of the Oregon Vehicle Dealers Association, I appreciate you hearing the bill, and there's some testimony being handed out to you. I've talked to the different groups that are supporting the bill, and I've asked all of them to not come testify because I know that you guys are in a hurry. But if you look on the sheet that's labeled What Are Other People Saying About House Bill 2042, you can see a list of some of our supporters, which includes the Credit Union Association, the Oregon Consumer League, the Oregon State Sheriff's Association, the Oregon Trucking Association, AAA Oregon-Idaho. House Bill 2042 has -1 amendments. Those we requested at the request of the Oregon Department of Transportation. They had some concerns about some of the technical language, and Amy has indicated that those solve their problem, but I'll let her testify in terms of what the impact those have. House Bill 2042 is a pretty simple bill. Right now, when you change the title on your car, you write the odometer down on the odometer form, which I provided you a copy with. And if the vehicle is 9 years old or newer, ODOT records that number, and it's available to Carfax and other organizations that supply consumers with information about the history of vehicles. And that's because there's a federal law requiring them to record that information or to have that information. Once a vehicle is over 9 years old, they no longer record that information, even though a lot of consumers are reporting that information on their title and registration form because it's the same form, whether a vehicle's older or newer. And so there's a lot of odometer reporting that goes to the Department of Transportation that never shows up on Carfax simply because we're not keying in the numbers. So House Bill 2042 simply says that if ODOT voluntarily gets a odometer reporting number from a consumer, that they should include that in the information that they supply electronically to Carfax and other organizations. There is a $60,000 fiscal impact, so it goes to Ways and Means. The $60,000 is to reprogram ODOT's computers and to monitor the implementation of the process. There's a number of different copies of testimony from other groups that's inside my package, and based on time, I'd just be happy to answer any questions that you guys have.
Thank you. Let's hear from the rest of the panel, and then we'll take questions.
Committee co-chairs, vice chairs, and committee members, thank you for this opportunity to speak. My name is Mark Huchet, and I'm the executive director for the Oregon Independent Auto Dealers Association. And we represent about 700 dealers, auto, truck, RV, trailer, and power sports in the state of Oregon. First and foremost, I want to state for the record that our association is for consumer protection at every level. We are also for consumer protection of certified licensed dealers at every level. In saying that, some of the recent news stories that have recently come out in articles portray dealers as the one committing odometer fraud, and I want to state for the record and clarify some of the numbers that were given there so it's not misleading to the committee. And I can say with the utmost clarity that dealers are not the ones committing this odometer fraud, which is one of the reasons this bill is hoping to curb that issue. It was stated by the source of the recent stories, an estimated 5,000 cases a year occur of odometer fraud. in the state of Oregon. That sounds like an overwhelming number. The source for those numbers, Carfax, according to OVDA, needs to be clarified so that they are not misleading. The estimated 5,000 cases of odometer fraud come from odometer discrepancy alerts in the Carfax system. According to Carfax, the red flag for odometer frauds is not always based around the sale of a purchase of a vehicle. There are multiple sources that sell odometer information to Carfax besides DMV. Oil change companies, tires, replacement, auto shops. Many times that odometer reading is transposed incorrectly by the employees of those facilities and gets reported to Carfax, which creates what you call an odometer discrepancy, possible odometer fraud. For example, if you bought a car in January of this month and the odometer reading was 49,000, that's what would be reported to Carfax from DMV. 3 months later, if you go to an oil change place to have your oil changed and the employee miswrites that down and reports it as 48,000 miles, that gets transmitted to Carfax. You now have a possible odometer fraud, odometer discrepancy. So the many estimated cases of 5,000 are really possible odometer fraud, odometer discrepancies, which are caused by human error and not true fraud. If true licensed dealers were committing fraud in the state of Oregon at the rate of 500 or 5,000 a year, it would definitely be reported to DMV, to the Department of Justice, the Oregon Dealer Advisory Council, and most definitely to associations that are here represented today. But let's look at the true cases of odometer fraud that do occur. According to David Sparks, who's the lead investigator at the U.S. Department of Justice's Odometer Fraud Unit, every consumer that is hurt by odometer fraud, there's a dealer that's hurt by odometer fraud. And it's very, very rare today that dealers are found of committing odometer fraud. In fact, Mr. Sparks said that over 90% of all odometer fraud is committed by consumers and unlicensed dealers, which are called curbstoners. A curbstoner is someone who basically sells a car without a license. They put both the consumers and dealers equally at risk. They also deprive the state of much-needed tax revenue. A common practice is to roll back the odometer. In fact, you can go to Google right now and purchase a device for under $100 and reset the digital odometer on any vehicle in less than 90 seconds. That's where a lot of the odometer fraud is coming from. In fact, the U.S. Department of Justice just arrested four individuals in Seattle who have been doing this for several years, who were curbstoners. The recent story that aired was depicting not a dealer, but a curbstoner. OIADA is a strong supporter of a measure such as this at the federal level so that states are operating consistently in regards to how mileage is reported for cars 10 years and older. Many of our dealers already enter the mileage voluntarily and feel that it would provide some deterrence to odometer fraud, but it will not solve the issue. Our initial concern dealt with mileage for cars 10 years and older becoming part of the official record and possibly causing more odometer discrepancies, thus inflating the odometer fraud reports even more. The recent language changes to in the amendments will help with some of those concerns. Another concern is that if this bill becomes law, it appears to put a so-called DMV stamp of approval on that mileage that is submitted. The federal odometer law is a rule that could be changed nationwide by NHTSA. It does not need an act of Congress. In fact, the U.S. Department of Justice Office of Consumer Litigation has already requested NHTSA to review that rule to change that. OIA does not oppose this measure, but would very much like the state of Oregon to be instrumental in getting the rule changed at the national level. Odometer fraud is the end result of not having strong enough curbstoning legislation. Curbstoning legislation would dramatically cut out the majority of unscrupulous practices illegal dealers and curbstoners use to take advantage of the consumer and legitimate licensed dealers. We take great pride in the caliber of dealers that are here in the state of Oregon. In our association, they sign and abide by a national code of ethics. and are the first in line in picking up the battle flag to combat curbstoning and odometer fraud. On behalf of those dealers, I thank you for this opportunity, and I'll be happy to answer any questions you have.
Thank you very much. Ms. Joyce.
Chair Reed, Chair Benz, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation representing the DMV, passed out a little bit of written testimony and here today to provide just a bit of information and answer any questions you have. One misperception perhaps that's been floating about is that folks do turn in odometer readings today for vehicles that are older than what is required, older than the 9 years. That shows up on the title transfer form, and DMV does keep that information. It goes into the microfilm record that's kept on every vehicle and is maintained essentially permanently. What the bill does is just require DMV to then record that information electronically as well as keeping it in the paper or microfilm version. Also, for cars that are newer or vehicles that are newer than 10 years, today we keep those electronically, but only the current and the most immediate past number. So the bill also has the effect of requiring DMV to keep all odometer numbers that are turned in electronically. We also understand the intent of the bill to be that whatever number is turned in, whether it's under the mandate or under the voluntary provision of this bill, that that number would get printed on the new title certificate that DMV issues when ownership transfers. So what DMV would do to implement the bill is to change our computer systems for the most part and change some forms and that sort of thing, as Mr. Fuller indicated. Just one concern that DMV has, which actually Mr. Boucher mentioned from his perspective, is a sort of, he called it a stamp of approval or sort of an air of authenticity, perhaps, to an odometer reading that shows up on a title that DMV has issued, a sense from a customer that that has been certified in some way, that that's an accurate number. So we just call that to the attention of the committee. But so what the bill does is just requires DMV to maintain electronically things that are today voluntarily submitted, so it's maintained in a secondary form.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Representative Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've had the pleasure of doing a lot of thinking and looking at this bill and have had some problems with the fact that I honestly do not see that the information, and maybe it is because it is just Oregon, or that we really don't validate the information we get. But the quantity and quality of information that we're going to get out of a voluntary system like this, I just don't know that it's worth entering into. And I think the other thing is, until you do, which increases the cost of this, actually have a visual verification of the information, I just don't see how we can trust the accuracy of the information we're getting. And that way, reason I kind of have a problem spending the money to implement this. I did ask about what if it was mandatory and people had to do it. And, of course, that does increase the cost as we move ahead, because then they do have to verify the information. And the other piece is how, you know, whether the 60,000 is the accurate number. There is a cost, and where does the money come from? And this could be a question to Amy Joyce to pay for it.
I'd like to respond, please.
Chair Reed, Chair Benz, Representative Beyer. The costs are largely the computer programming that would need to be done. So currently the system, again, it accepts only the most recent number and then retains the next last number for those newer vehicles. Anything after that would be kicked out of our system, so that would need to be changed. The second piece, then, is that the system is set up currently so that if one of our clerks input an odometer number for, say, a vehicle that was 15 years old, clearly outside the scope, that the computer system is set up to reject that number because it's outside of the scope. It's a kind of a catch for our employees. So that would need to be changed. And then, thirdly, a database set up to capture these new numbers. And we set up a new database because sort of futzing around with the existing database and all the different systems that connect to it actually costs more than just setting up a new database for these things and making the numbers exchange between the two databases. That's largely the cost. DMV has an ancient computer system, as you may have heard about, and so that it costs more money than one might think. So that's where the money, what the money would be spent on, where the money comes from. Department of Justice has informed DMV that this is not a qualified use of the highway fund because it's not a mandate from the federal government and doesn't sort of further the maintenance, preservation, and operation of the highway, that money would have to come from some other source than the highway fund, so according to the Department of Justice.
Perhaps this is yet another example of why it would be worth investing in a new computer system through the Department of Transportation. Representative Widener.
Thank you, Chair. Amy, just real quick, let's just say I have the opportunity to buy a classic Olds 98 1983. How would I authenticate that it had 83,000 miles on it right now with the DMV? So if I want to contact DMV to make sure this is 83,000 original miles and hasn't been rolled, well, obviously somebody could roll it back, but is there any way to do that? Because you said you are saving the information on microfilm. How hard is that process? Would it cost me anything? How long would it take to find out?
Chair Reed, Chair Benz, Representative Widener. So that information, anything that somebody has submitted over the life of that vehicle is maintained in microfilm. It costs $23 to request that complete record. I don't know how much time it takes. I don't think it's any significant length of time, but I also think it's not available electronically, that we would sort of digitize it and send it out, but it's a $23 record request for the full record on that vehicle.
Do you have a follow-up? No. Other questions? Representative Nathanson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. As you can imagine, because you've heard me say this before, I'm a little frustrated hearing about the computer database stuff. Doesn't make me happy. And I wonder what that cost represents. Does it mean that that's the value of one person working full-time for a half a year to figure out all the programming changes, or what? How do you get that actual cost? I'm assuming it's a guesstimate, and it's just how much time of an employee who's already working in the department. But I'd like to know.
Chair Reed, Chair Benz, Representative Nathanson. What happens is DMV estimates how many hours of programming it will take to do X, whether that's one person working on it completely or a several number of people doing it jointly. Usually these estimates reflect, you called it an estimate or a guesstimate. It's a guesstimate based on system changes that have been made over time, and DMV tracks how long it actually takes to do X and such to implement whatever bill that happens over time. So based on experience, yes, it's a guesstimate, but a guesstimate based on experience over time doing programming.
Follow-up?
I understand what you're saying. It doesn't feel good to think that we have systems that are so crummy that it's going to take that much effort to capture one extra piece of information. It's not a good sign that that's what it's going to take. I sure wish there were a way we could protect consumers from cheaters. I want to recognize that the dealers who are doing good, honest work are operating very well, and there are some people out there cheating and causing harm economic harm and other kinds of harm to individual consumers who purchase things. I wish there were a way we could help stop that. I don't know that this solution we're hearing today is the only thing we need to do. Sounds like we need to do even more, but I'll keep listening to my colleagues to determine whether we proceed with this or something in addition to this.
Mr. Chair, could I respond to a couple of the questions that have been asked?
Sure. Maybe I could ask one before that.
My apologies.
No problem. You'll get a chance to perhaps respond to mine then, too. Mr. Shea, first, sorry for mispronouncing your name based on the way you wrote it. I think I heard from your testimony that the concerns you have are perhaps reasonably described as broader than what's contained in this bill. I'm not sure I clearly understood your position on the bill, so I wonder if you could restate that.
Sure. We're keeping a neutral position. We do not oppose it. We actually would support this wholeheartedly at the national level. We feel that many of the dealers already voluntarily report the mileage in there. With this bill, it doesn't change how that operates. So the people that are doing this unscrupulous harm to consumers still have that choice not to enter that into the. So really, it's not going to solve the issue. I think that most of the dealers that were described as you were talking, those are the ones that do enter it voluntarily, and many of our members do that already. So our position is more neutral, and we definitely don't oppose it. And we thought that the amendments that were offered definitely solve some of the concerns that we have. But we feel it's a much broader issue because we feel that the end result of odometer fraud is not having strong enough curbstoning legislation with enforcement in there. The individual that was in the news story was not a dealer. He was a curbstoner. And he was already fined $52,000 in civil penalties for doing those activities, and he continues to do it, and that's why he's in jail now. So I would agree with your statement that this is a much broader issue than just the odometer. And we have dealers now that are already putting that in there. So you still give that choice to those people to not do it.
Thanks for the clarification. Mr. Fuller?
Mr. Chair, and part of this will address your question. We believe this is, while only one step, a significant step in the right direction, because I agree with my colleague. There are a lot of people that are putting those odometer numbers on the title and registration form, but when you pull a Carfax, that information isn't available to dealers or consumers because DMV is not putting it on the electronically accessed, so Carfax would have it. People can still ignore that part when they have a vehicle that's 9 years old or older. They don't, a dealer and a consumer don't have to put that number in there. Okay, but this will help because when a consumer or a dealer pulls a Carfax, they will have odometer numbers over 9 years old, so they can look at a Carfax report and the odometer on the vehicle they're thinking about buying. And if the odometer is less than the Carfax report says, that's going to give that consumer important information about whether that odometer has been rolled back or not. If this bill doesn't pass, they'll pull a Carfax report and they won't get an odometer from a Department of Transportation that's over 9 years old because the Department of Transportation isn't listing that number now. So by not passing this bill, we make it easier for people to roll back the odometers because there's less information out to determine whether that odometer has been rolled or not once a vehicle goes beyond 9 years. We think that if people that buy newer cars that are 9 years old or newer can get that odometer information, that lower-income Oregonians that are buying older cars with higher mileage ought to have the same access to information about the odometer after the vehicle is 9 years old. Representative Beyer was concerned about the accuracy of the information, and we agree there's an accuracy and information problem whether a vehicle is 9 years old or whether it's 10 years old. But we do have, and I'll draw your attention to the DMV form that I passed out and put a bright arrow on there for you. When somebody fills out an odometer report on a DMV secure form, they sign at the bottom of that report that the information that they're reporting is accurate. So people aren't going to take this lightly. They understand that they are signing a document and that they are essentially attesting to the information on there. And if they're not sure, the form already provides them with the option of saying that the mileage is not accurate, that it's already rolled past
100,000 miles, and they have an opportunity to say that that it's not actual mileage or that it's in excess of the mechanical limits. So whether you're a dealer or a consumer, you have an opportunity to opt out from that number and say, I'm not sure. And we think that's important because there are cases where an odometer is replaced after an accident or an engine is replaced, so we believe that the opportunity is there. The last thing that I'll say, and I apologize for taking so much time, there was a question about the number of instances of odometer rollbacks in the state of Oregon, and the information that the news report actually used didn't come from Carfax, and so I want to correct that. That actually comes from a 2002 NHTSA report, and the NHTSA report, and they factored out those kind of errors and looked for true cases of odometer fraud nationwide, and they came up with a number in 2002 of 452,000 odometer frauds per year in the United States. And so what I did is I took that number and I distilled it down. Oregon is 1.2% of the national population, and so that comes out to approximately 5,424 instances of actual odometer fraud in the state of Oregon based on the research that NHTSA did in 2002. Assuming and so that's where that number came from.
Assuming that Oregonians are no more honest than the rest of the country.
And that, by the way, Mr. Chair, was the number of odometer frauds on vehicles that are 9 years old or newer, because ODOT doesn't have, or the national, NHTSA doesn't have instances of odometer fraud past the year 9, because they don't collect, the data is not collected. So that's just the percentage of odometer fraud on vehicles that are 9 years old and newer.
Understood. Thank you. Representative Beyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to correct something you just put on the record.
Okay.
If we don't pass this bill, it makes it easier to commit odometer fraud, and that's not accurate. Status quo happens with non-passage of this bill. It doesn't make it easier, and I want to clarify that for the record.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beyer, I apologize if that was stated poorly. That was not my intent.
Representative Betts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to make sure that the dash ones, are these the department's recommendations?
You asked exactly the question I was going to ask. Thank you very much.
Chair Reed, Chair Bence, we discussed with Mr. Fuller that the base bill had some issues with it that looked to be problematic, and that to make it more feasible, one of the items being that people who are submitting this voluntary form don't have to be told that if they don't comply with the federal law, that is some kind of federal requirement, because it's not. So we suggested to him some technical changes, and they are Mr. Fuller's amendments based on what we suggested to make it more technically doable.
So with the amendments, the department's comfortable that it could implement and go forward, subject to the question of costs?
Chair Reed, certainly we could implement the bill with the concerns raised about accuracy, or the so-called DMV stamp of approval.
So I noted that the date on those amendments was April 13th. If Zach, correct me if I'm wrong here, we don't yet have the fiscal and revenue, so whatever else the committee decides it wants to do, we won't be able to take further action on the bill today. Is that correct? That's correct. So would have been nice to have those a little earlier if the date was accurate. It's worth noting, too, that if the committee decided it wanted to advance this bill, it would go to Ways and Means, given the fiscal. So to make that clear for the rest of the committee in their consideration. Are there other questions? Don't see any at the moment. Zach?
So in order to get a fiscal revenue statement, I will need an electronic copy of that amendment, please.
Thank you. So that is the entirety of the list of people who have signed up to testify on House Bill 2042. Is there anyone else in the room who would like to be heard on the bill? I don't see anyone. So that will thank you for your testimony.
Thank you for your time.
We'll await the fiscal and revenue and continue to assess the committee's interest. So we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2042. And open a public hearing on House Bill 2332. Zach.
House Bill 2332, as introduced, establishes fines for different types of vehicles. However, we do have an amendment that replaces the entire bill and makes it palatable for tow truck drivers to haul freight.
Thank you very much. Getting the sign-up sheet here. Just one person, Mr. Elkins. I expected you might... Oh, no, there's... You did your little trick. Yeah. You're sneaking three people into one line. Cheryl Baker, Jeff Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Al Elkins with the representing the Oregon Tow Truck Association. Today with me are two real people. They are...
What does that suggest about you?
I'm here every day. These folks are Cheryl Baker from Roadrunner Towing and Jeff Walker from Roadrunner Towing, both based in Ontario, Oregon. I'm talking today about the Dash 2 amendments that replace the entire language of the bill. And what we're attempting to do in this amendment is allow tow trucks to haul freight. Currently, all tow trucks must now just tow wrecked and disabled vehicles. They are licensed to do that and nothing else. Some of our industry, those that own trucks 26,000 pounds and over, would in some cases like to haul commodities with their trucks. They cannot do that, however, because they are not only licensed to tow wrecked and disabled vehicles. What this bill does is takes care of that situation by setting forth a new classification for tow trucks that are 26,000 pounds and over. This classification allows them to haul commodities. At the time they register the truck owner can determine if he or she want to use the truck to haul commodities, or they can use the vehicle just to tow wrecked and disabled vehicles. If they choose to haul commodities and tow, they pay a registration rate that is in line with the trucking industry. I have worked on this amendment with Mr. Russell with the Oregon Trucking Associations, and they support that, this amendment, and with Mr. DelPonte with the Motor Carrier Division, who has provided technical assistance in the relation to the amendment. I need to thank Representative Beyer for helping us get this amendment drafted, and Representative Bailey for letting us use his bill. That concludes my testimony, and I think Cheryl has just a brief statement to make.
Terrific. Glad to hear from you, Ms. Baker. Please.
I'd like to thank the representatives here for allowing us to testify on this bill.
And if you could start with your name for our...
My name is Cheryl Baker, and I'm president of Roadrunner Towing out of Ontario,
thanks,
Oregon. What this bill does...
And I'm sorry to interrupt one more time. Our microphones are very sensitive, so you could just move it a little bit farther away from you.
Okay.
It won't distort. Perfect. Thanks.
Okay. My name is Cheryl Baker, and I'm president of Roadrunner Towing out of Ontario, Oregon. What this bill allows us to do is take a non-traditional tow truck, a power unit, and a trailer, and while the majority of the time it is used in the towing and recovery industry, this would allow us to use it to haul commodities like a backhoe or like a piece of construction equipment, that type of thing. It's not designed to legislate for regular standard type tow trucks as you would think of them. And so it just, we're in a rural area. This allows us to diversify and provide service to our customers, and kind of brings the legislature in line with what's out there as far as the industry goes. This is not going to affect a regular standardized tow truck.
Thank you very much. Mr. Walker?
Chair Reed, Chair Benson, committee members, I also am here from Roadrunner Towing. My name is Jeff Wheeler, and I am here to assist to the best I can to help answer any questions with respect to this these amendments to House Bill 2332. And I don't believe I have anything else to add unless you folks have some questions.
Terrific. And did you say Wheeler?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I apologize. What's written in front of me is Walker. So
perhaps Mr. Benz did that.
I apologize. Any questions? Representative Benz.
I was just going to welcome my constituents here, and thank you for driving all the way over, or flying, as the case may be. And very happy you're here to testify in support of the bill. Looks like a very good bill with a lot of work, and so I'll obviously be supporting it.
Thank you very much. Are there other questions? So one that is probably clear on a close reading, but worth saying for the benefit of the committee and others, all of the standard kinds of restrictions and licensing and regulations that are associated with the type of activity you're seeking would apply in if the bill is in effect. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much. No questions from anyone else, it seems.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Thank you for coming. There's no one else who has signed up to testify, although I do see Mr. Russell in the back of the room, and given that your name was used in the last testimony, I wonder if you'd like to make a statement or... Okay. For the record, he, I think, indicates agreement with the previous testimony, so it looks like we have support from him as well. Do we have the necessary paperwork to move forward?
We can adopt the dash 2 amendments. We just can't move them to the floor.
Okay, so we don't have the fiscal and revenue, but we can adopt the dash 2 amendments. It seems like that would be a safe step to take, given that the bill is in its original form not being pursued. So I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2332 and open a work session on House Bill 2332. Representative Benz?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill or the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2332 dated 3/18/11.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves the adoption of the dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2332 dated March 18th, 2011. Is there any discussion of the motion? Don't see any. Is there any objection to the motion? Don't see any. The motion is adopted with the note that Representative Lindsay and Representative Sheehan are excused, and we can go no further on this bill for today. Sorry that we're not able to do that while folks from Ontario are here, but we'll hopefully return to that once we have the necessary paperwork. So close the work session on House Bill 2332. So open a work session on House Bill, a public hearing on House Bill 3273. Zach.
House Bill 3273 allows a household member of a fallen officer to continue to use the confidential address and records maintained by the Department of Transportation for up to 4 years.
And we have heard this bill once before. No, not at all. They're all running together for me and the fact that I was gone for a little bit. So, Brian DeLashman and Amy Joyce.
Mr. Co-Chairs, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brian DeLashman. I am here representing the Oregon Council of Police Associations, the Oregon State Police Officers Association. You would know them by the state troopers, and the Association of Oregon Corrections Employees. I'll spend very little time on this bill. It's pretty much self-explanatory. It's not a bill that we requested, but once my clients saw the bill, they thought it made sense, and they agreed to support it and wanted me to come and convey that. With that, I'll answer any questions.
Thank you. Ms. Joyce.
Chair Reed, Chair Benz, members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation, handed out some written testimony, and won't belabor that. There is a dash one amendment that I believe was requested by the sponsor, Representative Wingard. That corrects some technical issues that the department had identified. It will do just as Mr. DeLashman indicated, allowing spouses and other household members of eligible employees to continue to use that confidential address for 4 years after the rare and tragic situation of a eligible employee being killed in the line of duty. And the department would simply change some forms and implement as necessary.
Thank you. Questions? Representative Smith, did you? Is that out of the corner of my eye?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. That was not a hand raised.
Okay.
Good bill should pass.
Seems relatively simple. Representative Benz? Nothing from you?
Nothing from me.
Okay. That's the complete list of people who have signed up. Is there anyone else who'd like to be heard on House Bill 3273? I don't see anyone. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3273.
Do we have
all we need? Yeah, we're good to go.
Okay. Dash one, then we can go. Open a work session on House Bill 3273. Representative Benz.
Mr. Chair, I move adoption of the Dash 1 Amendment to House Bill 3273.
Thank you.
Dated 4-8-11.
Thank you. Representative Bence moves the Dash 1 Amendments to House Bill 3273, dated April 8th, 2011. Is there any discussion of the motion? I don't see any objection to the motion. I don't see any. The motion is adopted. House Bill 3273 is amended by the Dash 1s. Representative Bence.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3273 as amended to the floor with the passed recommendation.
Thank you. And we're just joined by the sponsor. We're about to move your bill. Would you like to be heard before we do that?
Might mess it up.
Yeah. this is where the classic, would you like to be heard?
Oh, it's your bill.
Or would you like the bill to pass?
Mr. Chair, I'm delighted to have the amendment adopted and the bill passed today. You are? This is State Representative Matt Wingard from House District 26.
Thank you.
The lady that I wrote the bill for wanted an opportunity to testify, and that was why I had thought it was going to move to Monday. But if the committee wishes to pass it today, I will give her a chance to testify on the Senate side.
I think that would be great, purely out of a sense of urgency with the other bills that we were hoping to be able to move today, that we don't have the paperwork for, so they're being carried over. It's certainly not my place, but might I suggest that the person you're referring to might come and sit with you on the side aisle when the bill is on the floor.
Wonderful.
Something like that. We'd love to honor her, but keep the bill moving.
I appreciate the committee's willingness to act on the bill. Thank you.
Thanks very much. So I think we were about to hear a motion from you, Representative Bence. Or did you make it?
I made the motion.
Excellent. So Representative Bence has moved House Bill 3273 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Don't see any objection? Don't see any. House Bill 3273 as amended goes to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Representative Wingard, will you carry?
I will, thank you.
Representative Wingard will carry. We'll close the work session on House Bill 3273. We'll open a work session on House Joint Memorial 20. Zach, remind us, please.
House Joint Memorial 20, which we heard before, urges Congress to enact legislation requiring the Federal Aviation Administration to expedite the approval process for unmanned aircraft and testing of rural areas.
Thank you. And we have a Dash 1 amendment. Is there anyone here following this bill who'd like to speak to the amendment? Don't see anyone.
Who's Representative Congress?
I believe you're right. I believe it is his. We're not expecting him today, are we?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm just looking through it as well. Zach, have you had a chance to explain or review the amendment? What it does?
I did not look at it.
Yeah, we'll both do that. Sometime. Like the amendment has the effect of changing the intent of the memorial to more specifically focus on counties that have an unemployment rate of 10% or higher. Otherwise, looks like the intent is consistent.
The amendment also takes out the testing in remote military operations areas when those areas are not in use by the military.
Mm-hmm. So we are in work session. We're ready to go. Representative Bence.
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 1 amendments to HJM 20.
Thank you. Representative Benson moves the dash one amendments to House Joint Memorial 20, dated April 1st, 2011. Is there any discussion? I don't see any. Is there any objection to the motion? I don't see any. The dash one amendments are adopted. And Representative Benson.
Mr. Chair, I move House Joint Memorial 20 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Benz moves House Joint Memorial 20 as amended to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any discussion? Just fascinating things going on laptops, Representative Benz. No discussion. Any objections? Don't see any. No objections. House Joint Memorial 20 goes to the floor as amended with a be adopted recommendation. We'll ask Representative Conger to carry the memorial and close the work session on House Joint Memorial 20. Representative Smith, you ready?
Can we stand at ease for a moment?
Sure. Mr. Chair, we'll stand at ease.
That's what you're moving, right? The dash twos?
I thought we were moving. Is the dash twos?
I have the dash twos that I got, especially as I was walking in here.
system. Seems I'm the blue light monitor.
Nicely done, Representative Nathanson. Are we okay now? Very good. So we're back on the record. We've opened the work session on House Bill 2879. Zach, can you give us a quick summary, please?
House Bill 2879 extends the sunset on the task force for Stage 2 Business Development Economic Gardening. It is now 2016, and it also makes other amendments to that provision.
And Representative Smith, would you like to describe the Dash 2 amendments to us, please?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, Representative Jefferson Smith, representing District 47, the Oregon Legislature. This bill, relatively humble, does a few things with the amendments. What the amendments do is, one, add a couple private sector members to the task force. Some of the feedback we got was it'd be good to have more private sector representation is what I was looking for. Second, to help to extend the sunset and to a time where it could review a program. What we're trying to do is get a program started like the one that was done in Florida, similar to a thing done in Michigan, and that Washington is also working on to, if you remember the testimony, most memorable might have been the woman from the Keyscaper who came in to describe her the program she received. We're trying to get a program started. This would allow for two things. One, to let the task force to continue to work to prop up a program. Second, to review the and get it housed within an existing institution and get it connected to existing economic development infrastructure, and then second to be able to review it, to review a pilot and bring back the results, and then sunset it after two biennia of reviewing that. The other thing it does, and this version does, and when we were offline, I misspoke. It also will cease meeting if it completes its evaluation early or if it recommends against, in fact, implementing a pilot program. So there is a date, but the date is the last time it could sunset. It could also sunset earlier. And the Dash 2s do that. When I was busily typing on my laptop, it was communicating with my staff. The Dash 2s right, and he said it was the Dash 3s, and then we got it figured out. It was, in fact, the Dash 2s that are the latest current version. And I think those are the key elements of it, and happy to answer questions if there are any.
I certainly have a question. Looking on page 4 of the amendments, what is good news from my perspective is more specificity about what the council is to do. So I wonder if you could talk about that, please.
Yeah. So when we started, there was and this bill was not originally, the original task force was not originally my idea, came from some other folks, including somebody who's now in Senator Merkley's office, and I must acknowledge when we started, I wasn't exactly sure all the things we were doing, all the things we were working on. And as we moved forward and learned more, we started focusing our attention, learning what the first step that was laid out for the task force to look at what the gaps were, look at the what was happening for particularly Stage 2 businesses, but earlier stage Oregon companies, and doing a gaps analysis on what services were available and what weren't. Honed in on a particular area of focus, which was helping homegrown companies find new markets and find new customers, particularly around market research. And so what we're doing here is trying to focus that, but then also connect it to what's currently happening. For instance, what's happening in growth in international markets, how it's linked to other programs such as Boost and other access to capital programs. In particular, trying to push for Oregon Business Development Program or another entity to do a pilot program, and that rather than being sort of at large doing analysis, now focusing towards giving advice about a pilot program, and then if that can happen, then it happens, and that's great, and that's what we'll continue to push on. And when that happens, or if it's determined that it shouldn't or can't, then to close shop as well. So I think those are, and then the key deliverables will be, hey, were we able to integrate and amplify our market research efforts in and sort of homegrown customer searching efforts to for Oregon companies, and are we able to do that in a way that works with the economic development tapestry?
Thank you very much. Any questions? Don't see any. We're in a work session. Representative Bass?
Mr. Chair, I move the Dash 2 amendments to HB 2879 be adopted.
Thank you. Representative Bentz moves the adoption of the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2879, dated April 15th, 2011. Is there any discussion of the motion? Mm-hmm. Any objection? I don't see any. Dash 2 amendments are adopted. We do have the necessary paperwork. Is that right?
We do. The fiscal is indeterminate, so it will still go to Ways and Means.
Okay. Representatives?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2879 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Representative Bentz moves House Bill 2879 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? I don't see any. Is there any objection? I don't see any. The motion is adopted with Representative Lindsay and Representative Sheehan excused, and House Bill 2879, as amended, goes to the floor with due pass recommendation and on to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Close the work session on House Bill 2879 and stand at ease for a moment while we review our agenda and I'm back from recess to make the following announcement that the following three bills will be carried over. House Bill 2042, we did hear that bill. We didn't have the necessary paperwork, so we'll carry that over in case the committee decides we want to move forward with it. House Bill 2332, the amendments to which we did adopt, but again did not have the required paperwork, and House Bill 2891, Representative Smith's bill, who is continuing to work on that. With that, I think we have exhausted the agenda for today. What we can do with the paperwork we have, appears you get 45 minutes back. Don't forget it, because we'll probably use it in one of our remaining two meetings before the deadline for action on House Bill. Is there anything else to come before the committee today? Representative Widener?
Excellent job today, Chair. Anytime you get us out 45 minutes early, that's almost deserving of a hug, and this is the hug session.
Be careful, Representative Winder. Representative Smith?
Yeah, permission is required prior. Are we going to have precisely the scheduled times for committee, or is there any prospect of having slightly different times, expanded times, additional times, changed times for next week? Do we know that already?
There were a lot of questions in your question. I don't know the answer to all of those questions. My hope is that we're going to be able to complete our work in the time that's available to us.
Okay.
It's going to be, I think, in the interest of those who are hoping to see action on various bills to keep our to be judicious in our use of that time, comments and questions and so on.
We were church mice today.
Indeed. If only we'd had the paperwork, we could have done some more. But that will be needed in our subsequent meetings as well.
Right.
Anything else?
Got to be a day.
Is that?
Got to be a day. Just to put my out there.
Okay. Zach makes a good suggestion to reiterate one more time all the bills that are carried over. Those would include House Joint Memorial 22, House Bill 2370, House Bill 2727, House Bill 3613, House Bill 3158, House Bill 3591, House Bill 2042, House Bill 2332, House Bill 2891. All of them. Reminds me of one of those days when we introduced a lot of committee bills.
We have 3613.
We do, yes.
And we have 3591.
Yes. 3591 and 3613 both carried over.
Okay.
I think that's it. With that, we'll adjourn the committee for today. Have a good weekend.
So you do the short straw again?
Yeah.